ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय that he was exalted in both prestige and opulences, and that he had offered his daughter to a person who was not only poor, but devoid of all culture. Her father might have been thinking that although she was a chaste woman, greatly adherent to her husband was in a deplorable condition. To counteract such thoughts, he said that the opulence possessed by her husband should not be understood by him. The opulences possessed by her husband could not be understood by materialistic persons like Daksha and his followers, who were flatterers and were engaged in fruitive activities. Her husband's position was different. He possessed all opulences, but he did not like to exhibit them. Therefore, such opulences are called abhaktya, or unmanifested. But if required simply by willing, Lord Shiva can show his wonderful opulences. And such an event is predicted here, for it would soon occur. The opulence Lord Shiva possesses is enjoyable in renunciation and love of Godhead, not in material exhibition of sense gratificatory methods. Such opulences are possessed by personalities like the Kumaras, Narada, and Lord Shiva, and not by others. In this verse, the performance of the Vedic rituals are condemned. They have been described here as Dhuma Bhakma Bihi, those who maintain themselves on the remnants of sacrificial foodstuffs. There are two kinds of foodstuffs offered in sacrifice. One kind of food is offered in fruitive ritualistic sacrifices, and the other, the best, is food offered to Vishnu. Although in all cases Vishnu is the chief deity on the sacrificial altar, the performers of fruitive rituals aims to satisfy various demigods to achieve in return some material prosperity. Real sacrifice, however, is to satisfy Lord Vishnu. And the remnants of such satisfied are beneficial for the advancement in devotional service. The process of elevation by performing sacrifices, either those aimed at Vishnu, is very slow. The practices of elevation by performing sacrifices other than those aimed at Vishnu is very slow, and therefore it has been condemned in this verse. Vishwanatha Chakravarti has described the ritualistic performers to be like crows, because crows delight in eating remnants of foods that's been thrown into the dustbin. All the Brahmins there who were present for the sacrifice were also condemned by Sati. Whether or not King Daksha and his flatterers could understand the position of Lord Shiva, Sati wanted to impress upon her father that he should not think of her husband to be without opulence. Sati, who was the devoted wife of Lord Shiva, offers all kinds of material opulences to the worshippers of Lord Shiva. This fact is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto. Lord Shiva's worshippers sometimes appear to be more opulent than the worshippers of Lord Vishnu. Because Durga, or Sati, being the superintendent in charge of material affairs, can offer all material opulences to the worshippers of Lord Shiva in order to satisfy her husband. Whereas the worshippers of Vishnu are meant for spiritual elevation, and therefore their material opulence is sometimes found to decrease. These points are very nicely described in the 10th canto. Om Agyanat Mirandasya Tanandanam Shalapaya Chakshur Mirtandina Tajmai Shri Grima Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Galatha Shiva Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Rama Hare Rama Hare Rama My dear father, Father, the offerings we possess is impossible either for you or the flatterers to imagine. For persons who engage in fruitive activities, by performing great sacrifice, are concerned with satisfying their bodily necessities, by eating foodstuffs offered as a sacrifice. We can exhibit our offerings simply by desiring to do so. This can be achieved only by great personalities who are renounced, self-realized souls. So here's the story. Shati is telling her father how the offerings of Lord Shiva, although he doesn't exhibit such offerings, but he mentioned the great offerings he enjoys is in renunciation, the happiness of renunciation and love of Godhead. This is where Lord Shiva's happiness. These are his great opulences. He is a great self-realized soul. So Krishna said that just simply the satisfaction of the self-realized soul, one who realizes the self, when he relishes the self, enjoys the self, by the self, this is indeed happiness, Krishna said. He sees stones and pebbles as gold as the same. He has a peaceful mind. Prabhupada says simply by getting peace of mind, one can understand the satisfaction, the happiness that is coming from just having peace of mind. Kali Yuga, we hardly can feel that peace of mind, but it's a state of consciousness when you have peace of mind. Just that happiness, Prabhupada, is so great, people can't understand that, and that's not spiritually, it's just peace of mind. So, and the great happiness of self-realization, the poet is mentioned in the book of Maharas and Radhavani. And the four Kumaras, they can move around in the high planetary systems. Their opulence is renunciation. They keep themselves naked like small boys, 4 years old. They don't have any desires at that age. So they keep themselves in that condition. Doesn't mean they're poor, but they're clothed by the four directions, but it doesn't mean they're poor or anything like that, like a beggar. they can even go to Vishnu Loka. There's a Vaikuntha planet in this universe. local Vaikuntha problem. And where Lord Vishnu is there. And the Kumaras went there one day. We said, we'll go to see Lord Vishnu. And the other brother said, well, for? He said, well, picnic or something like that. we're satisfied here. Well, why don't we go somewhere else? Wherever we go, we're self-satisfied. So what's the use of taking the trouble of going anywhere? We get greater pleasure in ourselves than anything else in the material world. So what's the point of going? We go for a picnic, out of curiosity, we'll have a look. So then they went to Vishnu Loka, and they, when they smelled the aroma from the Lord's lotus feet, mixed with the tulsi and chandan, they were feeling great happiness. And they said, how is it possible? We're smelling with our nose, it's a sense, one of the senses. We're smelling the sense objects. And we're experiencing more bliss than we will experience ourselves. How is that possible? Since they come to understand how Vishnu is that transcendental personality of Godhead, and service to Vishnu in relationship is more blissful than even the realization of Brahman, being fixed in Brahman realization. So then they became great devotees, but they're cited as being, you know, those who were after liberation. Like Narada Muni, Shukadeva Goswami is another one. He stayed in the womb for 16 years. He said, what's the point of coming out? I'm self-realized. I'm quite satisfied here. If I come out, there'll be more problems. I have to deal with the material world to some extent. Better I stay inside the womb, so he's quite satisfied. But when he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, oh, is this worth coming out for? This is enlivening. This is transcendental. So he came out to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are the great opulence that Daksha, representing materialistic persons, they're interested in material happiness, material prosperity, so therefore performing all these big sacrifices to take the foodstuffs and the moon. You can get that nectar from the moon guru. What's it called? That nectar from the moon? Shama. Somarasa. So they're interested in that they're performing nice sacrifices here, then we'll get promotion to the moon planet and be able to drink that Somarasa and we'll be happy. This is the goal, and they're after happiness, the material happiness. So, Daksha, he's on this platform of materialism. Of course, he is. He's a Prajapati. He's been given that service to populate the universe. That's his business. So obviously, he has a lot of attachment to get a position of Daksha. It's a very exalted position. He's one of the first persons born in the universe. So he's very exalted. But because he's a Prajapati or a janitor, then he's exalted in populating the universe, therefore materialism is very good for him. But someone's got to do it, so anyway, Daksha, it's a post, so he's taken that post to do this seva. But he's missing out on, obviously, the renunciation part, isn't there, with Daksha. And devotional service to Krishna, he's missing on these points. Although he's worshipping Vishnu, the sacrifices enjoying that before you perform any sacrifice, you have to worship Vishnu. So then you're there, the Shalagram Shila. They worship the Shalagram Shila first, Vishnu, then they go and worship the Devatas after worshiping the form of Vishnu. But they're not really, it's not really bhakti what they're doing, because the reason they're worshiping Vishnu is so they can get their material benefits, right? Everything goes smoothly if you can get their result of material happiness. So even the Brahman realization, Daksha is gone, because he's not renounced enough. And this Brahman renunciation is just like, even though it's far greater than anything material, it's still just like a little puddle of water compared to the happiness of bhakti, devotional service, engaging in service to God. In Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is saying that, you know, he's equipoised in all things, he sees folds and pebbles the same. Krishna says, this is indeed happiness, to be in that position, equanimity. This is indeed happiness. Krishna's been very sarcastic. He said, this is indeed happiness, arising from cessation of material miseries. So, the so-called happiness of the bliss of Brahman is just the absence of suffering, that's all. We are Brahman by nature. When we have purified our existence, then we can realize our own nature as Brahman. But that Brahman realization is just the disappearance of the miseries of this material world. So Krishna being kind of sarcastic here. This is indeed happiness. It's the great Brahman. The Upanishads are singing about the great mukti, the great liberation. Everybody's. But this is happiness arising from cessation of material miseries. That's all it is. Material miseries are gone and you come to your constitutional nature. Still, you have to go further. Okay. Aham Brahmasmi, that's okay, that's great, but still further to go, that is the science of bhakti, devotional service. What, Brahman is okay, Aham Brahmasmi, but what are Brahman activities? So the activities of Brahman constitute devotional service. So these great sages, they're self-realized souls, so this opulence is far, far greater than just simply materialistic opulences that bhakshas are after aspiring to get. But somehow or another they've got to populate. He's doing it as a service to Krishna. Someone's got to do it. So there's a meditation in it's in from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's also in the PD worship or Panchamukti. The meditation before worship of Radha and Krishna. So they have meditations. And it's describing how Krishna is situated under the Kalpa Vriksha tree and Vrindavan scene with all the blooming flowers and bees and birds flying around, all the different fruits and trees, and Krishna sitting on the throne, very comfortably, reclining slightly and playing his flute and fifth note. And gives a tiptoe explanation of his beauty from his lotus feet to his lotus face. And then it gives a description that in front of him are the different personalities. And the demigods are up the front there. They're right in front of Krishna. He said that the demigods are in. They want artha, kama, artha, kama, moksha. These are the progressive values of a human being. So artha, the demigods represent the artha, they're the big movers of the universe. So they want to create the universe, they want to have a universe, they're the big controllers of the universe, all the demigods. So they're interested in artha, economic development. So they're up the front, in front of Krishna. And then you get those who are interested in establishing the codes of Dharma. So you get these big rishis, Gautam and Ananda, and all the. If you're Indian, you have a Gotra, you come in a line, you have Gotra from one different sage. And that knowledge the family uses, they stick to that knowledge, that is their particular mode of worship and everything. That is their family, God for the family sage, Rishi. And so there's many Rishis and many families, they all take these the knowledge from these different Rishis. So these Rishis are there also in front of Krishna. And they're thinking that we're Dharma, we're establishing the codes of Dharma for the universe, and this is a very, very important job, which it is, for materialistic persons who want to stay in the material world and enjoy it. So they're establishing the codes of Dharma. Do your Dharma properly and then you get proper result. The ultimate result is that you can come back and take breath again. Even you're in the mode of goodness, you're following Dharma properly, but what is the ultimate result? You take death again, and you take rebirth again, and start again. So it's not so helpful, but they think they're doing a great service for the universe. Then they are, because that is for people who want to stay here, where they intend to stay here and enjoy. It's called Rini. Rini Kinkara. It means the debtor. And Kinkara means servant. So that's mentioned in the Vedic. That when you were born, you were a debtor, you had six debts to pay back. Your mother and father gave you the body, and you have debts to pay. The demigods and Shaka, key, light, water. You have to pay back all these debts, the rishis that you're coming in for that knowledge they're giving. So you have six kinds of debts to pay off. And the purpose of life is to pay off these debts. You have debt to the forefather, the Pitras. If you're coming, if you're an ancestor. So, so you're a debtor, so you have to worship all these devatas, you have to worship the Pitras. To become free from your debt. But what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Those who worship the devatas, they go to the planet of devatas. Those who worship the Pitras, they go to Pitraloka. So therefore they become a servant of the deity, of the demigods, servant of the forefathers, giving patient service. And those who worship the Buddhas, they become servant of the Buddhas. Krishna said, those who worship me, they will come to me. But that's the idea, so this is called Vedic nonsense. It's not that the Vedas are nonsense, we are nonsense, so therefore all these injunctions are there. So from birth you are a rini, you're a debtor, and you spend your life paying off your debts. Otherwise you're going to be sinful. It's sinful not to do that. As a result, what's happened? You take another birth amongst the demigods. You take another birth amongst the pitcher. Yeah? You put the picture of the father, of the grandfather up there. On the morning, you see everybody puts a picture at the end of shops. Everybody, they do their morning puja when they open their shop. They do the incense to the picture of the grandfather, picture puja. So then they should do that. The son should do that. And by doing that and often worshipping the pictures, they stay up in picture load. But then after the next generation comes, you know, they take that picture down and put the next grandfather picture up at the next generation. So they stop that worship. When his worship is stopped, again he comes back down again. And he takes birth in exactly that same lineage. So Patel or Goenka or in the Persian culture. He comes back exactly in that same family. And because he's worshipping again after leaving his body, he goes there again. So the community is perpetually taking birth again, going up, again coming down. So what use is it? The soul says, because the soul is searching for that ananda maya vaishnava. So he's trying it. I've tried worshipping after many, many, many. We've got how many lives? We don't know, but hundreds and thousands of lives. He's worshipping these particular forefathers and demigods. The soul. You know, the dictation is there, I'm not getting satisfied. So then he moves on to another demigod, he moves on to another form of worship, and like that, for many, many births, he's trying, not satisfied. He moves on again, like this, we've got 8 million 400,000 species of life is moving around. So, what is the benefit? Although it's the basic injunction, we have to pay off your debts, but what is the result of that? You go back to the planets of the day, because you go off to the Pitrilokas. So the Vedas are giving that information for people who want to stay in the material world. They want to enjoy the material world. Okay, then do it like this, Krishna. I've given you a system, I've given you an ashram system, I've given you a zombie system. If you want to stay in the material world, then do it and enjoy. Do it according to my direction. I've given these four divisions, manashram system, etc. You'll get maximum happiness by doing following my process. Yeah, for those who want to say same as you are. So these great transcendentalists, Narasha, Dev, Goswami, they have all opulences, but they're not really concerned to exhibit them. When Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, he was talking to Narasimha, I'm controller of this universe. Everything's under my control. And Narasimha said, well, I'm not. He said, what do you mean? He said, I can kill anyone in this universe. He said, no, you can't kill me. What? I'm the great Hiranyakashipu, who can I handle? Narasimha said, try. So Hiranyakashipu was angry, got his sword out, it went right through Narasimha. Okay, you want to try again? How do you do that? I want that. Because Hiranyakashipu was interested in golden bed, materialistic. He's no renunciation. So he's not going to get this. But they had their all types of mystic powers they can exhibit. So yeah, so Sati is saying, this is my husband's position. He don't know his exalted character. Just because he hasn't got money to put clothes on, but wearing his deer skin and he lives under the trees. But that doesn't mean he's poor or anything like that, or he's not a fit match for a king's daughter. Well, when there was the marriage of Sakya and Lord Shiva, then people buy them wedding presents and things like that. So he was donated a beautiful palace, Lord Shiva. Beautiful palace. And everyone was happy. Well, now Shiva's got the home, we feel bad, he's such a great personality, but he's living under the tree, we can't do that. So they're feeling bad. Oh, and Sati is such a mother of the universe, she should have a home. She should have a house. So he was donated a great, beautiful palace living. Everyone was happy, great. Now she couldn't live in the palace, Sati would live in the palace. Everyone would be happy, the relatives. So then, but because he's destined to be like he is, Lord Shiva is destined to be like that. So then one other great sage come, and Lord Shiva was giving honoring guests with presents, and that's just sort of, how can I serve you? He said, I want your palace, please take it. So he lost it. So he's not interested in maintaining material opulences. So his happiness is, he simply glorifies the Lord Shankarsan. He's the incarnation of Shankarsana. So he worships Lord Shankarsana. And he functions in this material world as an annihilator of the material world. He dissolves the whole material universe at the time of annihilation. And also in the Vishwarupa, when Krishna exhibits his Vishwarupa, then Lord Shiva becomes a Ahankara principle. In a fight, when Krishna had a fight with Momasura, I think Lord Shiva came to join in the battle, and maybe that story when he gave his sleeping weapon. The only weapon, they didn't bother about fighting anymore. Anyway, Lord Shiva was offering prayers to Krishna after that, and he was describing, he was glorifying his universal form, these eyes, and the sun and the moon, and all these trees and the hairs on the body, etc. And Lord Shiva said, as far as I am concerned, I'm your ego, your false ego. So even Krishna has a false ego in the universe. In his universal form, he has a false ego because it's a material form. So he has a false ego. So that is Lord Shiva. So this This is one of the great opulences of Lord Shiva. It's his potency. It's actually Shankarshan's potency that Lord Shiva deals with it in the material world, and he covers everyone with his false ego. How powerful it is. Everyone is completely bewildered in this material world, completely bewildered. Everybody has a very strong identity to be this body, which is very, very difficult to give up. And nobody even talks about it. It's so, Lord Shiva keeps it so well. Maya, his wife, so he's ordered his wife to keep three modes of material nature in constant activity, constant flux. It's difficult to sit down and understand who we are. We're constantly being identifying with this body, constantly. That's the way the whole world is structured. You never get a moment's break. Maya never gives a, this is Saturday, how powerful it is. Never gives a moment's break. You would think that one time she may give it a bit of a break. So I can understand who I am and not identify with the body. But she never gives 1 minute break. Never, I think, in the history of the newspapers of the world, there ever been even one little article saying, you know, you're not this body. Nobody knows. We keep him so bewildered by Lord Shiva and Bhagavan. Look at that opulence. They're bewildered in the whole universe. Kings down to the ants. But this is their opulence. And without these opulences, we can't do anything. Just like we're in this material world, we can't create a material world. But that has to be done by Krishna. So he has to fulfill our desire. We want to be the enjoyers. We can't be the enjoyers. Unless Krishna sanctions it, because he's the enjoyer. So therefore the first covering of the entities is the Ahankara principle, the false ego. In the beginning of creation, Mahavishnu is glancing over the material energy. So that energy, Roma Devi, who is the goddess of fortune, Yogamaya goddess, she carries the function of the glance of Vishnu. Vishnu glances over his amorous stream, and he's glancing over his consort, Roma Devi, Lakshmi Ji. And the function of that glance is carried by Roma Devi to the material cloud, along with the jivas are coming in, so time is another form of Lord Shiva. And he glances over the material energy, then the glance, which is not different than Vishnu, Vishnu's name, form, pastime, glance is all non-different. So his glance reflects into the material world and becomes Shambhu. And Roma Devi, Yogamaya Devi, she reflects Chai Eva Durga, she's his shadow energy. And Brahma Samhita says, Durga, the spiritual Durga. She reflects into the material world as Mahamaya. So Yogamaya becomes Mahamaya. And the glance becomes Shambhu. And then the secondary creation takes place. And Shambhu takes the form of a divine halo, Lingam. And David is the place that takes the role of the Dhoni. So then the combination of Parvati and Shiva, then the whole secondary creation takes place. This is how powerful they are. They're controlling the whole creation. That's what they call Prada Maya in Mayapur. And Rita Shiva, that means old Maya, old Shiva. Because they've been since the beginning of creation. They actually created the second creation. So this is the power of, you know, Shiva and Parvati. Not just thinking, you know, he's a bit like a beggar. Lord Shiva. So now the living entity is, he comes out with the glance also, and then he comes into the material atmosphere. atmosphere is not actually material atmosphere, because the modes of material nature haven't manifested at that time. It's the very beginning of creation. And at that time, the living entity, he's actually in Sudhasattva. His consciousness is Sudhasattva, because there's no influence of the modes of material nature. So he's identifying himself in, as pure Brahman at that time. Vasudeva existence, that's all that is existence, the Vasudeva. Then the first thing that happens, of course there is a, from the spiritual world when we left there, Krishna gives you three warnings, please don't go. Three warnings. And so the living entity is stubborn, somehow or another he wants to go. So Krishna says, okay. So then Krishna, I've created a universe for you, because you can't enjoy in the spiritual world. That's my position. You can't create a universe, so I'll create one for you. So you can, even though you're envious of me, sit down and create your whole universe, you can imitate acting as the enjoyer. So Krishna gives the first coverings of Vidya. He takes away remembrance of Krishna. Because if you remember Krishna, how you can be enjoyed? Bhoktam chetavasram sarvalokamashram. Krishna says, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the bhokta. I'm the controller of everything. If we know that, how we can be claimed to be the controller? I have this perception, this ahankara principle, this purusha bhava, that I am the controller. So Krishna covers the first covering of avidya. He takes remembrance of Krishna away. So now I can, you become the enjoyer, and Krishna creates the universe for you. So now you can begin your sojourn again in the material universe as being a controller and enjoyer of the universe. So the avidya is there, forgetfulness of Krishna. So the living entity, when he first comes with a glance, and the material modes of nature are not manifested, then the first covering comes is this ahankara principle. This is coming from Shankarshan. Shankarshan is a dictation from Shankarshan. He has those snakes, represents the ahankara principle. And Lord Shiva, for applying this, manifesting this ahankara principle amongst all the living entities, Shankarshan gives that to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva takes that position of being the ahankara principle. And then he comes. So the dictation is coming from Shankarshan. That is the false ego, it's the dictation of Shankarshan. And that dictation is the feeling that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. And the living entity said, yes, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be the controller. So that's the dictation from Shankarshan. The moment he says, yeah, that's what I want, that's what I want, then now there's a cause for a universe. Otherwise there's no need for a universe. This universe is only to satisfy the desires of living entities. Krishna certainly doesn't get his pleasure. He doesn't come here to get pleasure. His pleasure is in the spiritual world. So the material is simply created for you, because you want to enjoy it separately from Krishna. So in the future place, you can do it. So the ahankara principle covers the living entity. And yes, now I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. So then, now there's a need of creation. So, you know, Prabhupada said, just as you unroll a carpet, simultaneously, the universe is manifestable. Simultaneously, like unrolling of a carpet. And then, okay, everyone, you're in the universe, and you've got a body. According to the karmic reaction you had when you last went into the breath of Vishnu, you come out with that same karma, so the body's ready for that particular karma. So then again, you begin your sojourn in this material world. So this is the greatness of Lord Shiva. How are you bewildering everyone in this, with these false ego? These are all these potencies. So exalted, the personality. known as Durga, Parvati, the mother of the universe. In Bengal they have a big celebration, Durga Puja. Last month, very big program. And Prabhupada worship Durga Devi, they are fools. Because Durga Devi is all manifestations. She's the mother of all the living entities here, of the whole universe. She's the mother. And she has that proper, she has a thankless task of keeping all the jivas bound up in the material world. That's her service to Krishna. So she has that threshold and she's constantly jabbing. Adibhautik misery, adibhautik, adiyadevik, adiyatmik miseries, these three miseries. Constantly, everybody's at least got one. One, two or three. I have so many problems right now. Throat is not good, eyes are not good, I just got bad back. These are the proddings of Durga Devi to keep you in this world of suffering. One, two, or three, but guaranteed at any given time you've got a mental problem, you've got too hot. This should be hard, you've got too hot. You put a jacket and you come out, it's too cold. Yeah, it's too hot now. You go and take your jacket off, you come back, it's raining. So this is all Durga, she's jabbing. To keep herself all tightly bound up in this material world. But when someone becomes a devotee of Krishna, by meeting a devotee, one gets the mercy of a devotee, then one actually begins his devotional life. Then Durga is so happy, oh, at last, I don't have to step. You become Krishna's bhakta. I don't need to give him punishment and keep him in the material world. And she's so happy that Manaji, who is the goddess of this universe, she tells all of the demigods, because she's the mother of the demigods, they're also her children. Now you leave this soul alone. He's a devotee. So you leave him alone, and she's coming back to Godhead. So you give all help to come back. The demigods are in charge of universal management. So instead of becoming, when one becomes devotee of Krishna, Durga Devi, instead of becoming the means of punishment in her prison house, she becomes a means of deliverance for the devotee. And she tells all the devas help him, he said, clear the way back so he can go back to Godhead through this universe easily. So by her blessings, and then the devotees. She's Maya Devi, all this, so she lays back. She helps the devotees go back home, back to Godhead. So the very same person keeps everybody bound up. When they become devotees, then that very same person becomes their means of deliverance. He helps them. So this is the association. This is the power of Shiva and Parvati, how much potency they have. And Shiva also is simultaneously, although he's the false ego principle, Ankara principle in everybody, but still he's the greatest Vaishnava. He's the worship of Krishna, and so much help he gives, so much assistance. Daksha's sons, he has so many sons first. Was it Shiva or Narada trying to preach? And said, better to become renounced than get involved in the material universe. So the sons have been formal austerity. Daksha was really angry, but anyway, at that time he was a little bit, okay, my sons left and they went to become devotees. And they didn't want that service of propagating the universe. So then he had another 100 or 1,000 sons. Then the Narada Muni came. Now Shiva came. Oh, they had the Pachetas. But they did austerities, and Lord Shiva came to them. Beautiful prayers in the Bhagavatam. Prayers of the song sung by Lord Shiva. So he liberated all the projectors. Again, they were sons of Daksha. Again, he was angry. So this is the position of Lord Shiva. He's the greatest Vaishnava, and also he's by his potency here, because he's being bound up in the material world. But the moment you turn to Krishna, then everything will be revealed. So, here, Parvati Devi is saying, you don't know the glories of my husband. You think he's just like a beggar who's sitting under a tree with not enough possessions. So Prabhupada's quoting here how the Srimad Bhagavatam, this story is the example is given of Pariksit Maharaj's question. We see the devotees of Lord Shiva, they're very opulent sometimes, and the devotees of Vishnu sometimes they're not so opulent. Why is that? So then he explains. That Krishna says, the first thing I do if I favor someone, the first thing I do is take away his opulences. He said, my devotees, they have some material desires, and they pray to me to fulfill my material desires. But I'm not foolish. I'm not a foolish person to fulfill their desire. Why should I do that? They may be foolish by having material desires, and I'm not foolish. Why should I fulfill their material desires? So instead he creates a situation where he takes away the opulence of the devotee. And then the devotee becomes bereft of his opulences, so he becomes unhappy. And first he loses everything. Then all of his relatives, they desert him, because nobody likes a poor relative. So that they all give him the cold shoulder, they can't agree. So he becomes doubly unhappy. First all his opulence is gone. And then his relatives have desert him also. So he's doubly unhappy. Both. I have to take complete shelter of Krishna as my only hope. The only hope left is. So therefore he there by this activity he takes complete shelter of Krishna. Prabhupada said, I had that experience myself. And Krishna took everything away from me. All of my, he had his shop in. Then he lost everything. He got burgled he had his business going there. Krishna took everything away. He lost everything. And he was wondering, did I do a wrong move? Was it wrong? Or is it the hand of Krishna? So he consoled it with his god brothers and everything. No, it's a good thing. So Prabhupada said, then I took it as a blessing of Krishna that he's taken everything. Now I have to completely dedicate myself to executing the orders of my spiritual master. That becomes my life and soul. Prabhupada made it his life and soul. And then we see his Prabhupada's success story. So Prabhupada's acharya, as an acharya, he sets examples, so we can follow Prabhupada's example. Especially on this point of dedicating one's life and soul to the order of the Guru. This is also in that story of the prayers offered by the Pujatas to Lord Shiva, sung by Lord Shiva in that verse. But anyway, that chapter, in the purple, Prabhupada quotes how, by the mercy of Lord Shiva, the Pujatas, they got spiritual, they got devotion, service, spiritual Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions it, and he quotes, in Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna said one should be single-minded, determination should be fixed on one point and one point alone. So Prabhupada said, actually when I first read that in Vishnu Chakravarti commentary, and I read that, what is that one point of focus that one should be fixed on? And he said, Vishnu Chakravarti said, it should be fixed on the order of the guru. One should make the order of his guru, his life and soul. And Prabhupada said, it struck me when I read that. And I remembered my Guru Maharaj's order of me and my service to my Guru Maharaj. And then I made the order of my guru, my life and soul, to preach in the Western countries. And so a few purpose problems, we talked about that same purpose. But in that purpose of chanting the song of Lord Shiva, Prabhupada, he mentions the same thing. He mentions Krishna also, Vyasapakabhadeva, single-minded fixed determination. And then Prabhupada says, well, one should not only one should find out the ways and means to execute that order above and beyond anything else. Not only should he find out the ways and means to execute the order, but he should worship that order. That order actually becomes worship of the Lord. Because that's just to get back to God, that you can please the spiritual master. And you please him by seva, by doing some seva to please him. So the actual order of the guru becomes actually a worship. Yeah, you should find out the ways and means above and beyond anything else. So Prabhupada said, I founded the International Society of Krishna Consciousness on this principle. So that's the whole society is based on that. We can base our individual consciousness also on the same principle. Get the order of the Guru and make it your life and soul. It's the acharya, he's showing us. That was Prabhupada's, as an acharya, he was showing us the process he adopted. So we can also adopt that first too. Because it was successful, Prabhupada showed it was a success story of the Buddha. Yeah, so Lord Shiva was one of the Mahajanas, great personalities of the. What time do we finish? 9 o'clock. Okay, what do you think? So that's by meeting these great souls, great devotees, then one gets the actual connection to the Parampara. So it's these those coming in these Paramparas, especially the acharyas, the great souls who have great vision and established Krishna consciousness on this planet, like Brahmanara, Shiva, these are Kumaris, they have their own sampradaya. So these are all great personalities who actually know the real welfare work of living entities and give them processes to extricate them from this complicated material existence. And so they're happy to see the living entities here coming home back to home. Prabhupada said on a few occasions that he said, didn't you see, look, they were having a kirtan, and it became exciting all of a sudden. Prabhupada was laughing, didn't they want to chant this tune they were singing, and Jamuna was there, and she said, after she said, Prabhupada, what was this? What happened? And everything became so ecstatic, and everybody was started to dance. And so didn't you see? He said, Lord Shiva came, and the Ram came, they were dancing also, they were very happy to see all the villagers dancing, so they were dancing also. He said in London, he said you should make a little Vyasa sign for the Ram, because they come to the Arctic sometimes. So in London they got a little Vyasa sign inside of the altar that Prabhupada ordered to. So that's the position of these great personalities. This is their sampradaya, you know, from Narada. So they're very happy to see it. The movement is going on well. They have great desire also to satisfy the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these are the saving grace, the acharyas who bring this message, keep this message intact and bring it, these are the saving grace of Kali Yuga. Without these great acharyas, we've completely been lost. These acharyas come, they form sampradayas, and we get connection to that sampradaya. That sampradaya is our connection back to Godhead, back to Krishna. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was performing his austerities in Mayapur, he made a vow to chant Ek Koti Lakh, means 3 lakhs of name every day for 10 years. That was a vow he took, and he completed it. But right at the end of that, in his poetry, he said, from the eastern direction, he was at the Jogapit, and from the eastern direction, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva coming. They were doing Prema Sankirtan, all the devotees were there. Six Goswamis were there, Panchatattva was there, Gopishwar, his own guru was there. All these great personalities were there. And they said, now you should give up your austerities, now you should go out and preach. But you don't worry for anything. If you need money, we will send as you need. Mm-hmm. If you need manpower, we will send as you need. We are all behind you. The whole power is behind you. You go up and you preach fearlessly. Don't worry for anything. What you need, that will be supplied. You simply go out and preach this message of Brahma fearlessly. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur often used to use that as an example to his priest, to his men. Our Parampara is connected to Krishna, right? And there's a small Krishna assumes the form of a little dwarf boy, Brahmana there. He's only this big, but he sticks his toe to the universe. That's who we're dealing with, it's our Krishna. If you fit a little boy can stick his toe through the universe, what cannot be achieved? So we're all behind you, the whole Parampara, you don't worry for anything. He just got up and fearlessly preached the message of Garanga. So this is the greatness of these great souls here. It's only by their mercy, actually, that we can see things clearly as they are. So Daksha is blind, if he's seeing Lord Shiva as an ordinary personality living under a tree with no proper clothes. But we take shelter of these great souls. So this is our success in life. We take shelter of the Mahajanas, following their footsteps. That much we can do. We can't really understand their program, but we can assist in their. When we get instruction, then we can assist in executing those instructions from the acharyas. And that is our benefit. That is our take it back home, back to home. Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shandaya Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Nitai Bhava Prema Nandini, Tayana Bhavatu ki jai, Tayana Shami ki jai, Om Tati ki jai. Think on Nitai from Navadvipa, then maybe Navadvipa.
demişti.